you ever feel like what you learned in law school didn't prepare you for the world of running a law practice? Law school didn't teach us how to start our practices the right way so that we could scale them into a thriving business. We didn't learn how to make sure that our businesses would meet our financial goals and provide the type of lifestyle we deserve. After 10 years, I was fed up with struggling in my practice and decided to begin a journey to scaling a successful practice that would actually allow me to finally live the life I've always dreamed of. I invite you to listen in on the conversations I'm having with some of the most successful solo and small firm practitioners, along with leading business entrepreneurs, and share how I am implementing what I am learning, all with the goal of helping you take control of your practice and your life. This is The Law Entrepreneur. Hey there, fellow law entrepreneurs. Welcome to episode 242 of The Law Entrepreneur. I'm Neil Tyree, your host once again. And today my guest is Shauna Weber. Shauna is the CEO of a company called Edgewood Business Solutions out of California, and they provide a whole range of financial services to, in part, the legal community and others. But a large part of their practice is, or their business is, for attorneys and solo and small firm practitioners. And what's interesting to me is that they provide not just bookkeeping and accounting services, but something called virtual CFO, Chief Financial Officer services, and a whole range of other financial planning services. And it's really an interesting piece of the puzzle that I think we as attorneys often overlook. We think if we outsource our bookkeeping, well, I've handled all my financial obligations. But there's a whole range of services that can be provided and you might want to take advantage of using a company such as Shauna's company. So aside from that, she also does a podcast herself called Faces of Finance. And I think there's a lot of information here to sift through. So without any further delay, here is Shauna Weber. Shauna Weber, welcome to The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, it's a delight to have you here with us today, Shauna. Tell our audience a little bit about yourself and how you came to be where you are today.
Well, I am the CEO of California-based Edgewood Business Solutions, and we were founded in 2011. And our passion is really to help our clients with their bookkeeping and CFO services as well. So helping with projections and forecasting and growth, and also really educating our clients on their information. So not just handing you a profit and loss or balance sheet, but really going through that and explaining it to you to help with that education piece. And we really work to help clients increase profits and reduce expenses.
There's a couple of points there that you mentioned that are really the reason that I was so excited to have you on the program today, because I think we in the legal space here oftentimes don't get full value for outsourcing our financial management. And by that, I mean, we often just simply outsource the bookkeeping services. And I've come to conclude through my own experience and talking with others, that's a very limited part of the whole process. I mean, let's face it, in terms of bookkeeping, if you integrate your operating account with your accounting software such as QuickBooks, you're going to download all the transactions. After a few months of doing that, maybe a couple of months, you set up specific rules for reoccurring transactions. So 80 to 90% of it's already properly categorized. And it really takes about 2 minutes a week to resolve your bookkeeping issues. And you can print out your own P&L statement. And at that point, I begin to wonder, shouldn't I be getting more for my bookkeeping than just somebody holding my hand while I do that? And so that's what really interests me about Edgewood Business Systems and your company, because you offer much more than that.
That's correct, because there are different levels of bookkeeping services. So some are, say, more transactional. And like you're saying, maybe they're just coming in and they're posting the transactions. And then you go into your own QuickBooks and you look at your reports, and that's kind of that service. And then there are services like us where if that's all you want, that's fine. Yeah. But we also help with additional services, such as helping with billing to clients and paying the vendors and doing the reconciliations and the trust reconciliations. So there's like added services. And certainly people can do their own bookkeeping. And, you know, if that's for you, that's fantastic. You just want to make sure that you're staying on top of it, because it is really important and does affect many aspects of your business. It's not just the transactions in QuickBooks, right? It's making sure that you're invoicing on time so that you have good cash flow. It's making sure that you're paying your bills on time so you don't have any late fees or extra interest. There's a lot of things in the scope of, or the umbrella, say, of bookkeeping that need to be handled in your finances.
Well, one of the things that really piqued my interest when looking at the services that you offer and talking with you is your virtual CFO offering. Tell us a little bit what that entails.
So with that, we do a lot of growth projections or budgeting, and even our Profit First offering. So a lot of times firms will say, like, I need to see the trends. What's going to happen with my cash flow in the next 6 months, 9 months, or a year? Or I'm thinking about adding an associate. What would that look like? And should I be putting money away in advance? Or I need an additional admin. And I know that that's really a cost to me. And it's not an, say, income producing or billable staff member most often. And what would that look like? And when should I bring that person on? So we're doing a lot of cash flow forecasting. We're doing strategic planning. We're helping be the liaison between, you know, their CPA, because, you know, with that document, and depending on what kind of law firm we're talking to, you know, making sure all the agreements are in place and that it aligns with what we're trying to do financially with the CPA and the agreement structures.
Yeah, I think for many of us, particularly the solos and small firm practitioners, we think of outsourcing our bookkeeping services, and that's kind of almost, you know, I think it's a given. I think you have to do that. A wise person who was on this program way back in the very beginning said that's one of the three things that every solo or small firm practitioner should have is a bookkeeper. You should do it yourself. And I think that we often feel like that's the cornerstone of the financial advice that we're going to be getting, and comes to find out that, well, bookkeeping is just a small part of it. Whereas there's this disconnect, because I think we think we're getting a virtual CFO as opposed to a bookkeeper. You know, I kind of expected the bookkeeper to do that budgeting and forecasting with me, to do some of the modeling and the like, and being able to ask those financial what if questions. And it's real. I've only actually kind of come to realize that those are separate concepts in talking to you and others like you that separate that function.
That's correct. I mean, and some people will put it, you know, we put it under sometimes the header of bookkeeping, but again, there's different levels. Just like a CPA can just file your taxes, a CPA can also help you with specific type of tax planning. But if you're just going to your CPA and saying, well, here's my records, just file my taxes, and you don't ask about their additional services, and they don't ask you, right, there's not that communication piece, right? All you're going to get is your tax return filed, and they may not tell you all the other things you could be doing for advanced tax planning. So you really, when you're hiring an outsourced bookkeeper, any type of bookkeeper, even in-house, you kind of want to, you want to know their skills, and you want to try to ask some specific questions about what services do they offer, what do they recommend for you, and what are future services that you should be adding on, and will they communicate that to you when it's time? Because maybe right now all you need is that transactional service. You're just starting out, you just want the financial report, some, you know, information about your profit and loss and your balance sheet and your cash flow. But then as you grow, you know, will that bookkeeper support you, or will you know that, okay, that bookkeeper is going to do the transactions, but now I'm going to hire, you know, more of a accounting/CFO person to really help do more of the planning. You know, you could have three people really on your finance team, or it just depends on the skill level of who you're hiring. They may be able to do offer more than one service.
And that's what I hope like this discussion stimulates in terms of the way people are thinking about managing their financial services, because I think that's exactly correct. And I don't think we've made that leap as in the legal space, particularly for small firms, that range of services can and maybe should expand as your practice is more successful. I mean, at least initially in the beginning, when we're struggling for clients and we don't really need a bookkeeper to tell us whether we're making money or we're not making money. We can look at the balance,
right.
And know whether that's true or not. And when I get my first P&L, a profit and loss statement, you know, I look at one number really, and the rest of it is just kind of bubbles down to that number. But it's taking it to that next step and becoming more aware of what I can and should be asking for. I think that really creates that opportunity for growth.
Correct. And as mentioned, I mean, we'll have clients that will come to us and they'll have a bookkeeping service already and they are more transactional. And the price is right. They're doing a fair job. And so we, you know, our firm will say, keep that bookkeeper. They're doing a good job for you. Like, there's no need to switch services. That's working. But now we'll come in and we'll, you know, help you do strategies or any planning, or we'll help you with payroll, those sorts of things. So again, sometimes, you know, you start with that same person and they're okay. They're doing a great job. And then you just need to add that layer. But I think as firms grow, it's really important to consider, you know, when is it time to really look at outsourcing additional tasks in your firm.
Well, you anticipated my next question, because I think it then becomes a chicken and egg type question. When is the right time to start to think about outsourcing some of your billing and bookkeeping tasks? And does there come a time when it goes beyond a transactional or a part-time responsibility to something more closely resembling a full-time support?
Absolutely. I would say if you're submitting bills late to your clients, you should really consider outsourcing some of your billing. And, you know, I know that you may want to look at the drafts, but at least if you can get the drafts over to you, you can mark them up. They can make those revisions and send them out to the clients. You have that separation if the client has a question or if you need to collect money, because sometimes that can be a little uncomfortable. But if you have a person, you know, in between that's helping you collect that from your client and staying on top of that, you're really helping your cash flow. And one thing I would recommend if you do outsource your billing is to make sure that you have an email that's something like accounting at your domain, so accounting at your law firm.com, so that all of the data would reside within your business and it avoids, you know, any type of confusion with your client. Because if your client's getting an email from Sean at Edgewood Business Solutions, who is that, right?
Right?
You would really want it to have your domain name, and that's something that I highly recommend. Plus, if you ever change services, again, all the data kind of resides in that same email.
You know, that's really a really valid tip there. I appreciate that. I like that a lot. Now, a lot of practice management systems these days include a billing component to them. Used to be that accounting and billing was separate from practice management or case management tools. Now, a lot of them have it built in. Do you work with some of those platforms?
So we work with several, but I would say, you know, Clio is one that people use. It's easy to use. You can send your invoices right out of Clio. They can pay, you know, if you're connected with LawPay, and that's a good system. So you may not even need someone to do that. Or again, it just depends on how busy you are. You just want to make sure that you're not the holdup in getting the bills out and getting the money collected.
Right. So I can see a scenario where I make you a user on my platform with the proper mm-hmm. credentials and the segregation of responsibilities and say, hey, Shauna, you know, we're recording the billing information, but the process of actually generating the bills and overseeing that. That's what I want my financial officer to do. Can you do that for me?
Yes. So we make sure all the expenses are added, and that if
there
is
something
any,
that's often forgotten.
Yes. And you don't want to forget that. That's important. And then, you know, making sure if they have money in their trust, and Clio makes this super easy. It tells you, you know, that they have money once you do the billing to apply that. And so things like that, there's a lot of little pieces that need to happen. And so, yes, you could absolutely outsource that, set up the proper user ID, set up the proper email, and still have oversight.
Yeah, I think it's really important to make clear, because I know some people will say, well, I can't use an outside service because I'm using a platform like Clio or several of the others that do just that. And I'm glad that you're able to clarify that you're able to work within that kind of structure. So that really works great. You know, the other question that we get so wrapped up in, and I freely admit I know nothing about, is how to strategize over my tax obligation and making sure that I'm withholding the right amount of money, that I'm paying into the right system, all those kinds of things. Generally speaking, that doesn't come with a transactional bookkeeping service. And so that's more of this, as I think this chief financial officer, function might provide. Tell us a little bit about, as business owners, you know, what we should know about taxing.
Well, what you should know about taxes is that there's a few layers there. There, you want to make sure, of course, that you're maximizing any expenses and you're not leaving anything on the table, because we often see that there's some things that are overlooked, and that would be something as like a cell phone expense because you've been paying it out of your personal account, or business mileage if your vehicle isn't owned by the business, or you're working from home and you need this home, you should take a home office reimbursement, or anything that you've paid for the business personally. But really, when you look at it, you have a transactional bookkeeper and you need to be working with either, you know, the next level person to make sure you're capturing all these expenses, and they're asking you those questions. Do you have additional expenses? And then also giving that information to the CPA, because there are things like, in our realm, bookkeepers or CFOs, we're not going to know what your, say, depreciation calculation is if you have assets. And that's really, you have a vehicle in the business that has depreciation, you have office equipment, those sorts of things. And so that does need to be run through the system with the CPA to let you know where you're at. But I would say you really need to make sure that if you know your effective rate, and again, it kind of depends on your corporate structure or how you're structured, but your effective tax rate, so you know what to be putting away. And that is a question you can ask your CPA. What's my effective tax rate? But as you're a solo, say, law firm, or as you're growing, you know, your income could be increasing. You could have a higher net profit, and you don't want to get to the end of the year and then, you know, it's tax time and it's too late. Now you owe all these taxes when you could have strategized throughout the year. So we're really encouraging, whether you're doing your books yourself or you have an outsourced firm, that you are communicating with your CPA at least twice a year. And that would be kind of towards the year end, like November, early December. And, you know, maximizing any tax strategies you might take advantage of before you just go in March and say, here's my tax stuff, and now you have this big bill. Right. And sometimes what we see too, and this is like a tip I love giving and I want everybody to know, if you file cash basis on your tax return, you definitely, if you have expenses that you can prepay in December because your net income is a little higher, maybe you got more money in December than you anticipated, and now you need to offset that because your cash basis, you can prepay some of your January expenses like rent to help offset that revenue to avoid kind of a weird tax bill in one year versus the other. Or maybe you needed to buy a new computer and you're kind of worried about your cash, you could actually charge that on your credit card. And as soon as you, if your cash basis, as soon as you make a charge on that credit card, it is considered an expense. Mm-hmm. So even if you charged it in December, but you pay it in January, you can capture that expense in December. And that's something, you know, we want people to know.
Sure.
So, you know, those are just like super important tips. We've seen it where businesses just miss it slightly. So they have this tax liability for, you know, 2020. And in 2021, it's a completely different picture. And it was just a matter of if they would have paid something in December versus January.
Today's episode is brought to you by the team at Spotlight Branding. For many years, lawyers like you have spent thousands of dollars on marketing campaigns that generate tons of leads, but often left many of them in the dust once the campaign ended. Spotlight Branding has found a better way. Their Content Loop system not only nurtures all of your leads and contacts in perpetuity, but it's done by pushing out quality, evergreen content that elevates your credibility and helps the rest of your marketing efforts actually work. Spotlight Branding's Content Loop makes it nearly impossible for your network to forget about you, which means they'll think of you first when they or someone they know needs legal help. Spotlight Branding has turned hundreds of lawyers across the country into the go-to attorney in their community with their Content Loop by producing engaging content that speaks to your clients' needs and fears, and they can do the same for you. To get started, they're offering listeners of The Law Entrepreneur a free download that explains the Content Loop and how you can put it into practice in your law firm's marketing strategy. Just go to spotlightbranding.com/TLE, as in The Law Entrepreneur, spotlightbranding.com/TLE to get your copy. Spotlight Branding, more referrals, better clients, higher ROI. Now, if you've been a listener of this podcast for any time, you know that I sing the praises of Ruby all the time because they're really responsible in my own practice for helping me grow my business, deliver personalized experience to my clients, you know, building customer loyalty, really, in terms of having a consistent front-facing office partner in Ruby, and allows me to stay connected anywhere, anytime to my business through their services. So I can't say enough about Ruby. I'm delighted to have them and continue to have them as a sponsor of this podcast. And this episode of The Law Entrepreneur is sponsored by Daylight, the all-in-one contact relationship manager, or CRM. I've been using Daylight for well over 10 years now, and it's the best CRM for business on the Mac and iPhone. And despite having a case management platform that I'm very happy with, I still use Daylight to handle all of my many other law firm needs. When you're running your own law firm, it can be difficult to stay on top of follow-ups, keep track of details and communication, and stay aware of what needs to be done next on each project. Daylight organizes everything in one place, so you don't have to rely on your memory to keep it all straight. If you're feeling like it's time to upgrade from spreadsheets to a CRM, check out Daylight. You can download it from the App Store or visit www.marketcircle.com and try it free for 30 days. On top of that, you can get your first month free when you tell them you heard about Daylight here on The Law Entrepreneur. Daylight by Market Circle, staying top of mind without the stress. You know, when you provided me with the list of potential expenses that are often missed by attorneys, I wondered if somebody had leaked my tax return to you. Because I'm looking down the list, I'm like, yep, missed that one, yep. Missed that one. So let's go through these just kind of specifically. Cell phone expenses. Now, I know I'm not the only one who uses their personal cell phone for business purposes. Now, I have a business number, and often times, or 95% of the time, the calls go through my business number, forwarded from that number. But I'm actually using my personal cell phone to place the call. I've never reflected any expenses associated with that in my business taxes. So I don't think I'm
just saved you some. I just saved you,
some money, right? So I'm thinking that everybody out there is going to look. Hey, me either. So that's one. I don't want to gloss over that. And you know, business mileage is another one that I just don't take advantage of enough. There's an app on my phone called Mile IQ, and I've spoken about this on the program before, which is beautiful because based on movement, it knows you're in the car and it tracks the trip from start to finish. And then you have the opportunity to identify that trip as whether it's business related or personal. And it collects all that up on the month. I have all that available to me, and I still haven't made that available to my CPA for tax purposes.
You definitely want to do that because we kind of see it as almost like tax-free money. I mean, you're reimbursing yourself for business expense, but it's right. money that's coming back to you, right? And even if, like, here's the good news in this. If you didn't do it for 2019, you can still pay yourself in 2020 for it. You wouldn't want to, like, try to go back and recapture, like, several years you would probably want to talk. Right. I mean, all of a sudden it's, you know, some crazy number. You'd want to ask your CPA, but I would say it's reasonable. It would be reasonable if you ever got audited, right, to say that I forgot to do that in 2019. It's not a big amount, or kind of make it a process where you're reimbursing yourself like in 2020 for the year before, or 2021 for 2020. But you could definitely recapture some of that 2019 expense.
Yeah, and if you're an attorney who works throughout the state, you know, you're going to different courthouses and you're meeting clients in different places, not just your home office, your home locale, that travel expense can start and add up.
Yeah, I mean, if you have to go, I mean, anywhere, you have to go purchase supplies or, you know, things like that, that's a valid business,
sure. Talk to us a little bit about, you know, now with COVID, most of us are working from home, at least to mm-hmm. some level. And mm-hmm. we've converted, you know, the corner of the dining room to a home office. Are there opportunities there in terms of tax savings that we want to be aware of?
Absolutely. Again, you can reimburse yourself for a home office expense. There is, again, for sole proprietors, there's a little box they can check to get like a standard home office deduction, but you mm-hmm. want to do the calculation to see if your reimbursement should be above that. But essentially, you're figuring out the percentage of your home or your apartment, wherever you're at, as a percentage of the total square footage. So if I have a 3,000 square foot home and I'm using, you know, 1,000 square feet, you know, you can do the math. And you really look at, depending on if it's a mortgage or rent, there's a calculation, and I would be happy to send a link to you. So if you wanted to provide that to your listeners. Okay. So it's, you know, let's just call it rent. So it's your rent expense, your utilities, your internet, even things like gardening, HOA. There's many things that go into your home that you want to consider when you're doing this calculation. And if you own the home, then there's a depreciation piece to that as well. And again, it's kind of in this little calculator that you can use. And then you figure out the total cost and then take the percentage of your home office as the reimbursement. So
interesting. Yeah, I think that's something we've overlooked because unless you did it with foresight and saying, I'm moving my practice to a home office, I'm going to set up my home office. But most people were forced into this situation by the pandemic and mm-hmm. they probably have not thought about that. So I'm really happy that you're able to share that with us. You know, another aspect of the pandemic, and again, I'm going to plead my own ignorance here, is the PPP forgiveness program. And I know we already went through this one round back during the summer. It doesn't look like we're going to have any further stimulus package maybe through the end of this year. So maybe we're talking about next year. But talk to me a little bit about, does that make sense for a solo and small firm practitioner to make an application for that loan? And what's the rationale for that, particularly if you're a profitable law firm and that you're still making money during the pandemic? Maybe you're not making quite as much as you were before, but you're still making money during the pandemic. Talk to me about the pros and cons of that whole program as it applies to the law.
A really great question. And again, everybody's situation is going to be different.
Sure.
But what we're advising our clients is apply. It is a loan. And if you don't need it, park the money. And it has the forgiveness component to it. So if we get the second round, I would encourage all of your listeners to apply because they could be profitable today, but we don't know if we are going to have another lockdown. We don't know what those circumstances are going to be. We don't know if there's going to be additional funding. Unfortunately, there's a lot of unknown factors. And so, you know, what we're saying is, okay, if you get a PPP and let's call it, it's $30,000 and you don't really need it, you still can give it back if you feel like, you know, that's the thing that you need to do for your practice. But if in 3 months you have a lockdown and your income is not coming in and you didn't apply for it, now what, right? Now you're forced to make some decisions that you wouldn't have had to make if you at least applied, put the money in an account, and then that gives you more options. I feel like there's less options when you don't, you know, apply to do this. I feel like you could get yourself in a difficult position. And often we see that when things like this happen or, you know, things happen in the economy, that credit really dries up. So we see that it's harder to get a loan at the bank and it's harder. Sometimes your credit card companies will actually drop your available credit. So we don't want people to be in that position. We would rather have them be prepared and not need these funds and give them back if that's what they feel like they need to do, rather than be in that situation where they're forced to make these tough decisions.
Yeah. It's a quandary, or mm-hmm. as they said in The King and I, it's a puzzlement, you know, as to whether or not it makes sense. And I can certainly see, you know, if putting food on the table and maintaining your mortgage up to date and being financially viable is dependent on your practice success, it's in your best interest to go ahead and apply and so that you have it if you need it.
Right, because then you have an option and you have the option to still return it if you decided that, you know what, we're doing 5 times the amount of revenue that we did before and I feel like this could go to someone else. You can give it back mm-hmm. at any time. But if you're in a situation that things are going great and then all of a sudden some of your clients can't pay their bills and now you can't pay your bills, you know what then? And that's really where we're encouraging you to apply. Just if you think you don't need it right now, save it. You can always give it back. There's no penalty or anything for that.
Right. And in some cases, it might be even waived, excused. Right?
Right.
All right. So one of the other aspects of the services that you offer is based on an approach to cash flow. And that is the Profit First system. I think it's first presented by the author Mike Michalowicz, who wrote a book called Profit First, Transforming Your Business from a Cash-Eating Monster to a Money-Making Machine. A lofty subtitle there. But explain to our listeners, if they've not heard about what the Profit First philosophy is, explain to them what that is and how that might apply to their practice.
So the principle behind Profit First is to change the way that business owners really think about their cash flow, because our traditional model is revenue minus expenses equals profit. And then you have the Profit First model, which is revenue minus profit equals expenses. So really it's about paying yourself first and what you have left over, you will make that work. So they talk about something called Parkinson's Law, and the author and historian Parkinson theorized that our demand for a resource increases to meet the supply of it. So if we're given 2 weeks to do a project, it takes 2 weeks. We're given 8 weeks to do the same project, it takes 8 weeks. So it happens the same with money. If I give you $1,000 to figure out a marketing budget, you're going to figure out a way to make that work. And if I give you $10,000, you're probably going to spend $10,000 on the same thing that maybe you could have spent $1,000 on. So you get a little more creative. And it's really where sometimes business owners will look at their bank account and think, oh, I have all this money, I can just spend it, rather than really conserving that money for other use. And what I can use as an example is we all have subscription services. That's like the way of the world now, right?
Right.
But how many of us have subscription services that we're paying for that we're not using? Because it's just coming out of our account and we're not thinking about it and it's just gone, oh, that's only $15 a month, right? Yeah. But if we really had to be strategic and look at what was in our operating account to pay our expenses, we might be a little more picky and choosy about what we're, you know, subscribing to, and if we're not utilizing it, pausing those services or canceling them. So it really causes you to take a look at your revenue and allocate it and plan ahead, rather than, you know, the traditional bookkeeping is you're looking in reverse. So Profit First kind of helps you take your revenue and allocate it where it needs to go, but you're also paying yourself first, because I think that's a big complaint of business owners, where they get unhappy. They wanted the freedom of financial freedom. They wanted time freedom. You know, they wanted, you know, the ability to have creativity freedom, but then they get so bogged down in, I'm paying everybody else, or I'm paying all these bills and I haven't paid myself, and it makes them unhappy business owners. So a lot of times making the shift to Profit First and having to pay themselves first helps them make the decisions on everything else they're going to pay.
Well, isn't it just kind of a different stimulus for doing proper budgeting? I mean, yes. Wouldn't you essentially be able to achieve the same result if you were better at budgeting on the front end?
Yes, but I'd like to ask you, Neil, how often do you look at your budget versus your bank account?
Never. That's why I'm in the position I'm in.
Hey, we can help with that.
Yeah.
But it's kind of like, you know, we kind of giggle like your grandma's envelope system with cash, right? Like if you go to the grocery store with $100, you're going to spend it, you're going to, you know, be careful about what you're buying instead of throwing everything in the cart. But it's really your behavior is you're really not going to be looking at your budget. Maybe you do, and that's great. And you can operate off of looking at your budget because you're really great at that. But most business owners are logging into their bank account and they're seeing what they have, and that's how they're making decisions. And so Profit First really aligns your behavior with your dollars so that you can, you know, keep yourself to, you know, meeting those same goals that you set out. So you can achieve that budget, but you're looking at your bank account instead of looking at that budget you never want to look at.
So I'm guessing that there's some baseline level of profitability that you must have before you can reliably apply this principle. Because if I'm just breaking even without paying myself, I'm just starting out as a solo, you know, it's an aspirational goal to pay myself first.
Well, in the beginning, that's absolutely correct. And especially with, you know, if you're a new firm, you do want to try to pay yourself something, put something towards profit, even if it's 1%, 0.5%, right? Yeah. And then you're really forced to get creative again with your expenses or negotiations, because you know, we all know that things are negotiable. So maybe you ask for a service that you're getting for 6 months to be $100 less per month, and then it goes to the regular rate. Like, again, you get more creative, but you should start at the beginning giving yourself something.
I think that's such an important principle. I'm glad you phrased it that way. It's almost, again, like this, I keep referencing this book on my shelf over here by James Clear, Atomic Habits. It's almost like you're building that habit, even from the very beginning, the habit of paying yourself first. Even if I'm only paying myself $100, I pay myself first, and then I'm making everything else work behind that. And as more revenue comes in, I'm going to increase the amount that I pay myself first and manage the expenses based on the resulting available funds.
Correct. And you're right about the habit. And then the excitement grows. You know, you're building up that amount that you're paying yourself, and you feel better about your business. Your business is working the way that you intended, and you're working towards those goals. So I think that's always really important, is to keep the goals in front of you. Why did you start your business, and how can you have these habits that align with those goals?
There's so many attorneys who have hired a legal assistant, or who have hired a paralegal or an office administrator, and they're sitting there saying, I'm paying this person $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, and I'm making $20,000. There's something wrong here. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It does lead to a jaded outlook on life.
I would say in those situations, absolutely, that causes unhappiness. And I think they need to then look at their whole picture. Why is that happening? You know, and why do I have these staff members? Do I need them? Could I reduce it with some, you know, reduce it with an outsource service? Right. Could I give them more tasks? Could I give them some revenue producing tasks? Are there other things like the bookkeeping that I could take off my plate so I'm not doing, and I can spend my time in those revenue producing activities? So really looking at that full picture for the employees as well.
Well, I do think it's a really interesting concept. I have to admit that I did not put a lot of stock in it when I read the book. But as I've talked to more and more people like yourself and been confronted with those questions, such as you suggest, are you actually looking at your budget? It seems more appropriate to me. The more I think about it now, the more I start to apply it. So I appreciate you helping to clarify that for me. Shauna, we could spend a lot of time here talking about more things that a company like yours, Edgewood Business Solutions, provides. Let me just clarify, you're in California, right? But you can offer services outside of California?
That's correct. We are mainly California focused, but we do have other associates that we could refer if someone had, you know, questions and it was kind of outside of our area. We mainly focus in California, but it just depends on the scope of the project, you know, whether we would handle something outside the state.
Yeah, well, because California's pretty big. You got your hands full just dealing with California. So with that in mind, tell our audience, if they want to reach out to you, what's the best way for them to contact you?
They can contact me at Shauna@edgysolutions.com, or we're very active over on Instagram at Edgy Solutions, or on our website, they can sign up for our newsletter. We give very helpful tips on many important things in business and even employee related. And so that would be at edgewoodbusinesssolutions.com.
All right. And we'll have all of that in the show notes here. And I also point out that you do a podcast as well, dealing with the financial world. And our listeners can go anywhere they look for their podcasts, such as this one, and look for Faces of Finance and be able to hear you and your associates interview some really interesting folks about different aspects of the financial practices. And so I think that's might be a resource that our listeners might want to take advantage of as well.
Yes, thank you for having me on the show today. You provide such valuable information to law firms. I mean, there's so many, again, like you say, aspects of being a solopreneur as you're growing your firm. And there are all the things people need to be thinking about to be successful.
Well, I'm sure you've given everybody something to think about and to worry about. Hopefully they can resolve that, not worry too much going forward. And I thank you for taking the time to be with us today on The Law Entrepreneur.
Thank you.
Well, there you have it, Law Entrepreneurs. Thanks for being with us today and with this episode of The Law Entrepreneur. I want to thank our sponsors, as usual, Ruby Receptionists, Daylight, and Spotlight Branding. Make sure you swing on by our website at thelawentrepreneur.com or visit our Facebook page or Twitter account. You can find us anywhere by just searching on The Law Entrepreneur. Also, if you'd be kind enough, I'd love it if you could go to your podcast application and leave us a rating and a review. It helps with our visibility and it helps ensure that we're there to be found when people come looking for podcasts in the legal space. So once again, thanks for being a part of today's episode of The Law Entrepreneur.